EFL. It's the Football League podcast that would never settle for a draw after five matches. Coming up today, our big season preview. We'll tell you who's in for a good campaign, who's set to struggle, and what else to look out for as 72 clubs hope to settle the score in 23-24. This is What the EFL. Man, those summers get shorter every year, huh? The start of the new season just around the corner, so we're reassembling for our second campaign. Over the course of the new series, we'll have great guests and the features you loved last term, but today it's all about looking ahead to the new campaign, and I've got my two podcasting pals joining me, Matt Davis-Adams, to do so. First up, Adrian Clarke, a winger turned writer and broadcaster. He played in the Football League for Rotherham, Carlisle and Southend. He also turned out for Arsenal as well. Welcome back, Clarkey.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for that, Matt. Nice introduction. Yeah, it's good to be back. Done the golf, went to watch the Open, went to watch the Ashes. I've had enough of all that nonsense. Just want to get on with the EFL now.
Yeah, it's nice to have summer sports, but they do make you think the football is still by far the best, isn't it? Joining Adrian, an EFL Gold Centurion and Swindon Town Hall of Famer, the one and only Sam Parkin. Sam, I'm imagining you are more of a golf guy than a cricketer.
Yeah, that would be correct. Bit of a damp squib, though, wasn't it? Comfortable victory in the Open. Cricket, my nephew's been pulling me through it because I can't have the weather. I just can't have that.
That's it. That's totally killed it for me. Like I'm like very, very casual cricket, but I'll watch the Ashes or whatever. But yeah, that Manchester one, it's like, really? We're just not going to play the end of the game because of the weather?
I have an extra day, come on, or two. Yeah, I mean, I got into it yesterday. The Stuart Broad ending was nice, wasn't it? My nephew was around yesterday, so he got me into that. So that was a nice way for it to finish. I was racking my brain on my favourite, you know, kind of sporting moment of the summer, and it was probably actually going to Ascot on the Thursday, the big day at Ascot, which was good fun. And we were in with the... we were in the cheap seats, basically. So we went last minute and it's absolute mayhem if you haven't been.
So if you're in the cheap seats, can you just wear jeans and a T-shirt or just have to
I think you can go as Ali G if you want. I'll go in fancy dress. but that was good. Yeah, it was a absolutely scorching hot day. And we spent the majority of it just undercover catching up, but that was probably my sporting highlight of the summer series.
All right, well, we're all looking forward to the new campaign. We thought we'd do this by going division by division. We'll pick some teams who we think will do well, some that will struggle, some games to watch this weekend, and some transfers of note. We'll start first of all in the Championship. So then we welcome Leeds, Leicester and Southampton from the Premier League and Plymouth, Ipswich and Sheffield Wednesday from League One. Let's start with who we think will be amongst the contenders for promotion. Adrian, we'll start with you. Somewhat depressingly, the three favourites to go up with the bookies are the three who've come down from the Premier League. It seems to always be the way, doesn't it? Is that how you're thinking too?
I think it's only fair, really. I think they've got the strongest squads. If you were to ask me for a top six, those three would have to be in it. And it wouldn't at all surprise me if two of them got the automatics. They're just big clubs with good managers, huge budgets and really talented squads and a lot of good young players as well. When I look at Leicester, I think they've got quite a nice blend, actually, given the signings they made with Cody and Winks coming in. But they've also got good young players, haven't they? Dewsbury Hall really stands out. Leeds, whether they keep them or not, will remain to be seen between now and the end of the window. But the likes of Nonto and Somerville and guys like that, I think can have a lot of fun in the Championship. So yeah, I think they're worthy favourites, those three, but nothing is a given in the Championship. We know that. And there's every likelihood that one or more of them might struggle and they might have to make changes throughout the course of the season. And when I mean changes, I mean sacking the managers.
Yeah, it's interesting, Sam, isn't it, that all three of these teams have got different gaffers in place from the ones who they went down with. So Daniel Farke obviously knows all about the Championship, got Norwich out of it twice. Russell Martin's been managing in this division for a couple of years now. He's the Southampton gaffer. And Enzo Maresca at Leicester's really fascinating, isn't it? Because he's obviously been schooled by Pep Guardiola, which we saw did Vincent Kompany no harm in the Championship last season. But it's something of a risk, isn't it? Getting somebody in who's never managed at first team level before, never mind in the Championship.
Yeah, I think there is risk attached to it. But yeah, Arteta would be another one you could point towards. He worked under Kompany, obviously. And yeah, he's held gigs before, hasn't he? First team head coach roles. So we shall see how it goes. It's difficult to predict exactly what they're going to be, but I'd imagine it will be heavy possession. When you look at those two players that Clarkey just mentioned in Winks and Cody, you'd expect them to try and dominate the ball. Maybe Winks be similar to what Cullen has been for Company's Burnley. You know, someone just progressing the ball side to side, nudging it around, making sure they have complete domination. And they've got potentially real firepower in Daka, Vardy, Iheanacho. I mean, that trio should be enough straight off the bat. I like the signing of Callum Doyle as well, who seems to have had progressive loan moves every year in terms of what he's done. I remember that stellar starter he had at his time at the Stadium of Light, his first couple of appearances were magnificent. Manager will know him well, but that looks to be a really shrewd bit of business as well. So no, I'm really excited to see what Leicester are. I find it difficult to go all in on them because there is a little bit of uncertainty. You look at what Daniel Farker has done previously, as you said, Matt, and yeah, Russell Martin knows the Championship really well, really good squad. They shouldn't have any difficulty picking up his style of play, if you like, because they're all such good technical Premier League players. I wouldn't have any worries about that. It's just whether Russell Martin can convert his great potential into winning trophies, getting promoted. That's the question mark around him at the moment. But yeah, I mean, really excited to see all three and how they start the season, because there's likely to be more outgoings more so than incomings in the next few weeks, I would say, with Premier League managers. And recruitment officers or whatever they're called circling.
I think with Leicester as well, the goalkeeper is a big change. So last season, it was a massive weak spot, wasn't it? It was, I think, a bit of a schoolboy error, a little bit of complacency really on Leicester's part not to replace Kasper Schmeichel properly. They went with Ward and Everson, who weren't really up to the job. And they've gone with this new guy from Bromby, Hermanson, and everything I read about this guy is positive, meant to be a top class shot stopper, great numbers over there in Danish football. But the thing that stands out is he plays from the back. He's one of these footballing keepers that is very comfortable with his distribution. So I think what we're going to see is, you know, that back, probably a back three for Leicester playing out from the back, you know, that with a really comfortable ball playing keeper. It's going to be good to watch, I think, from Leicester's point of view, but very, very different to what went before.
Sam, anybody other than the three relegated teams you like the look of? We've got Borough, Coventry, Sunderland, who made the playoffs last time. Blackburn and Millwall were on the fringes of it. A lot of people talking of Ipswich as well.
I'm really excited to see Coventry, actually, and Sunderland. You know, those two beaten playoff teams. I love the way Sunderland are going about it. If you rewind 3 or 4 years and think about the state that the club was in, to have them having such a forward-thinking plan, recruitment strategy, the style of football as well, the tail end of last season. Yeah, they've lost Diallo, but Pritchard, Clark, Roberts, just a joy towards the end of last season. So with some really funky signings from the continent, young lads coming in, Bellingham as well. So yeah, looking overseas, but also taking promising young players from this country. I think that's really exciting. Coventry's going to be a bit different. I think we know their style of play got a bit more direct towards the tail end of last campaign because of Jokeres's skill set. That's going to be different with Sims. Very different type of player. That's an excellent signing. Obviously paid quite a bit of money for him. So I'm intrigued to see how they go. I'd say Middlesbrough will be in the mix. And I say that just because I just think the manager's brilliant, you know, given what he did. I'm reticent because of Akpom's lack of involvement in pre-season, the loss of Archer and the loss of Giles. Kind of those three stand out to me. Ramsey as well, who did well on loan. So I just think they're a bit light at the moment, Middlesbrough, to go all in on them. I'd like to see them get a striker, definitely, because whether Akpom's going to be able to A, be there because there's going to be Premier League interest, or B, replicate what he did last year, I think there's big question marks about that. But I think the manager's brilliant, superb. So if there was one team to breach the relegated sides, I'd go for Borough.
What about you, Adrian? Anyone else who I didn't mention there? Maybe a Norwich or a Preston or a Watford, somebody like that, expecting to be in and around the promotion picture?
One of those three was the name on my lips, and it's Norwich City. I think David Wagner having a pre-season will be big. I do. I think he's got a proven pedigree in English football. And And he inherited a squad that was a little bit of a mishmash last year. Morale was very low. And it didn't end well. Towards the back end of last season, Norwich were poor. But I think he'll have got stuck into them in pre-season. And the business they've done is quite shrewd, I think. I've always liked Jack Stacey since I first saw him at Luton. I think he'll come in and do okay. Ashley Barnes is a bit of a winner. He might not play every week, but he's going to get on some centre-half's nerves throughout the campaign. Shane Duffy, I think, is an upgrade at centre-half. I think he's going to do well. And Fashnacht, I think I've pronounced that okay. They brought him from Young Boys. He's a winger. Full Swiss international. Scored goals for his country. Gets into double figures most years in the Swiss league, and he's played in Europe quite heavily as well. So I think he could be a bit of a dark horse to watch. So yeah, we know Norwich have got plenty of good players. They just need a bit more direction and maybe a more clearly defined style of play this season. I think they'll get that under Wagner. So yeah, Norwich for me have got a sniff. I'd certainly put Coventry in the mix. Borough too, but Borough, in my opinion, are weaker right now than when they ended the last season. And I think Sam pretty much said that. Couple of dark horses. I think that Birmingham have done good business this summer, boosted massively by the new ownership. Like, you know, I've got a few pals that are Birmingham fans and they're absolutely buzzing. And throughout the time I've known them, they've never been buzzing about a season. So that I think is going to lift them, and they've brought in some good players. And Hull City, I think, are a team on the up under Liam Rossignol. I think I saw them last year, quite impressed with how well coached they are. Don't concede very many goals. They just need to add a little bit of quality, probably at the top end of the pitch, to challenge. And if they can do that between now and the end of the window, I think they got a sniff, Hull City, because they were so hard to beat. And I see them heading in an upward trajectory.
Yeah, I think some really interesting names that Birmingham have brought in, you know, guys that have been around Championship, League One, undoubted quality. I really like the wing backs. I'm so pleased that I'm not going to have to say that Birmingham are playing a 3-4-3 or a 3-5-2 and they haven't got natural wingbacks, which I said 73 times last season. So I think Buchanan and Laird,
yeah.
I think that was the most important thing for Birmingham to go and do. I had Hull City amongst my relegation candidates, Clarkie. Ooh, so that's okay. The first time we're going to fall out. Yeah, I saw a little bit of social media stuff from Liam Rossignol saying, you know, if this is the way we start the season with you guys in this dressing room today, I'd be confident going in. Well, I wouldn't be. I thought they...
Well, he can't tell them that, can he, Sam? Come on.
No, he can't. And it's the conversation that I'll be going on at every training ground. That was the first thing I thought when I was seeing it. But I didn't think they were much cop towards the end of last season. And you hit the nail on the head there. They didn't have enough creativity, enough goals in the team. And I'm not sure Estepinian and Delap, I think, who's come in after having two kind of average loan spells last season, are going to be the answer. It feels like the owner tried to create a bit of a Championship All-Star 11 when he initially got the gig. And they showed flashes last year when Estepinian, for one, was, you know, scoring some goals. And I think Seri obviously was the biggest name that went in, and he's clearly a classy operator. But I think the jury's still out on Liam Rossignol, although I talked him up, you know, when he was at Derby initially, and felt that he probably would have got it right over time there. I'm not sure the squad...
What is it that you're not sure about? Because I think he's quite a good organiser. I think his team's played some pretty good football, and maybe lack that punch. Mate, I've been thinking, is that a personnel issue rather than a coaching issue?
No, I'm not pointing directly at him here. I'm saying squad. I'm saying owner. I'm not sure they're all on the same hymn sheet. So we'll see. I wouldn't have them in my bottom three, but I think it could be a tough season for them unless they, you know, add a few more in the days that remain in the window.
All right. Well, that allows me to nicely segue over to who we think is going to struggle. Sam, I can't help but think that you're wishing ill on Hull City because things are looking so bleak for your boys, Queen's Park Rangers. So here's Gareth Ainsworth after, I mean, they got smashed by Oxford, didn't they, in pre-season. Gareth Ainsworth, everyone knows we're up against it. Saturday wasn't good enough and we've got to make sure the boys are firing next week. Our friend Nick Miller has quote tweeted this by saying, when the manager says you're up against it before you've played a competitive game, you know you're in for an all-timer of a season. I'd say the mood at Loftus Road is not exactly optimistic and euphoric ahead of the new season, Sam. Is that a feeling that you're sharing?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm quite surrounded by QPR fans where I live as well. A fella pulled over in his van on Saturday to have a chat with my eldest son, who was in his QPR get-up. probably during the 5-0 defeat at Oxford. The goals were probably raining in when he was having that conversation. He blamed his grey barnet on being a QPR fan, this van driver, to which I removed my cap to show my lack of barnet. If I can just, speak from the heart, I suppose. I was shocked a little bit with Gareth Ainsworth's comments when he went in the back end of last season. Shocked might maybe a little bit too strong a word, but they were in freefall, granted. But to hear a manager take over at QPR and be talking about we just need to survive and stay in a division with so many points yet left to play for last year just seemed a little bizarre to me when you had the quality in that squad and the way they'd started the season. I mean, to go from where they were under Mick Beale to where they are now is just astonishing. And this isn't all at Neil Critchley's door or Gareth Ainsworth. It's, you know, people that have been in charge of the recruitment and, you know, people across the club. But yeah, I think this is going to be a incredibly tense start to the season. Of course, I think when it kicks off, you've all got the enthusiasm. The sun hopefully will be out. The new shirts in the stand, a few new signings, and they'll get behind the team, no doubt. But I think it could very quickly turn sour at QPR. Ilias Chair and Chris Willock have been the great hopes, I suppose, in recent times, preempted by Ezra. We had that period of Bright, I say, Samuel, if you remember, who I think have kind of carried the club, if you like, over a few seasons where they weren't in trouble. But now I don't know how much Chair and Willock want to be there. There's huge problems defensively. Dunn got injured at Oxford. I don't know why we're in a position now, why Rob Dickey is now turning out for Bristol City either. I think a year or two ago, we were talking about Rob Dickey being a Premier League player in waiting. So I don't know how his career has tailed off at Rangers so horrifically badly. So yeah, there's a catalogue of things going wrong at the moment. I don't know if Gareth Ainsworth's going to be the answer long-term. I hope that they can survive this year, but I doubt very much he's going to be at the helm if they start poorly.
They have brought in Asmir Begovic and Jack Colback, so a bit of experience to add to the ranks there. Elsewhere, Clarkey, Rotherham are always looking to stay in the division and not much more, aren't they? You think that'd be the same this time around? Obviously, Plymouth, one of the teams coming up, not a huge budget. Cardiff stank the place out for a lot of last season. Any of those or anybody else you think is going to struggle?
Yeah, I would expect all of those clubs to be in and around the bottom eight, I guess. But Plymouth have got continuity. So they've gone with the players that got them up. And more importantly, they've bought the players that were on loan that did so well for them, like players like Morgan Whittaker and Barley Mumba. So I think that'll count for something. That's definitely a positive. Rotherham have lost some good players this summer, not least Ogbene. He'll need replacing. So that's an issue for them. I probably would have them in my bottom three. Sheffield Wednesday, I'm a little bit concerned about, I've got to be honest. Obviously, yeah, whether it was Darren Moore or now was Zisco Munoz, I just think their squad is going to struggle in the Championship. I just do. I've looked at the numbers as well. It's not a huge squad. They've let a lot of players go and they've not really filled those gaps massively yet. Now Ashley Fletcher's come in, but I mean, he's not scored very many goals wherever he's been in the last few years. So I'm not sold on that one. So I think it could be a long campaign for Sheffield Wednesday. The other one is Preston, actually. I just feel like there's a lack of momentum at Preston. I like Ryan Lowe. I like the football. I like him. But it felt like he was getting really frustrated towards the end of last season. They were very patchy. And I remember Sam talking about them quite a bit, you know, about their sort of lack of firepower up top. Obviously, they fixed that towards the end a bit with a couple of loan signings. But yeah, I'm a bit worried about Preston this season. I feel like they don't have any momentum and that they might be closer to the relegation zone.
All right, we're going to look ahead to some of the weekend's games shortly. But first of all, I've asked the chaps to pick some transfers from each division that they like the look of, or maybe they don't. Sam, you've gone for a player you and I know well. He's marched on from Serie A all the way to Yorkshire.
Yeah, Ethan Ampadu in at Leeds. I think the fans like incredibly excited about him. Had to kind of have a look back over his last few seasons to remember that he played kind of 25, 30 odd games for Sheffield United in the Premier League. That passed me by a little bit. But given what he did early part of his career, the way that he's an established international now and so important for Wales, I think it's time for him now. It's time for him to knuckle down, really show his quality. In a summer where we're still talking about Chelsea being a bit short, in defensive midfielders in the middle of the pitch. Yeah, he could do a job in there, certainly. I really like him in that role. That's where I expect him to play. Although I remember him playing in the Champions League for Leipzig at Tottenham's new stadium and had a cigar on, for regular listeners, going back to last season. He absolutely cruised that game in the middle of a back three. So gives Daniel Farke options. I'd say as good a player that Chelsea have had come through, I know he started at Exeter, but as good a young player, defensively minded young player, right up there with the likes of Gerhi and Chalaba, I would say. So big year for him. Been relegated 3 consecutive seasons. I thought only I had achieved that in my distinguished career. So it'll be interesting to see how he does, performs, you know, thriving in the team that you'd expect to be at the top end of the division. So I think he's a really good get, you know, and Leeds haven't done much business, have they? So, yeah, hopefully he can step up to the plate.
I saw Ethan Ampadu play for Chelsea under 21s in the Papa John's or whatever it was called back then, when they got to the semi-final against Lincoln. And I was there for the game, and he was immaculate. He was brilliant. And he played like a captain.
Temperament.
Could only have been 17, 18 at the time. And I thought, wow, this guy is going to be at Chelsea. The only thing was his height. And I thought, for a centre half, he's quite small. Is he going to, you know, is that going to hold him back? But obviously we know he can play in midfield as well. I'm really surprised that he hasn't made it at Chelsea, or he didn't make it at Chelsea. There was definitely a quality player there, but this is a big move for him, isn't it? Huge move. He's got to shine here. Otherwise he's going to sort of have a career, you know, knocking around Championship or League One.
Yeah, I'm staggered he hasn't got a move to a Premier League team. I saw him play for Leeds last week at Burton, and he played as a holding midfielder. And yeah, Rolls-Royce was the cliche that came to mind. Adrian, in terms of your transfers, you've gone for a double header, both new men in at Coventry, last season's beaten playoff finalists, who, lest we forget, have lost the goal-scoring prowess of Victor Gyökeres.
That's right, yeah. A few Coventry fans where I live were saying, we've only got about 9 players. This was a few weeks ago, but they've been busy in the market, and they've got a great manager in Mark Robbins, and I like the way they play. But you look, I didn't want to be too obvious, so I've gone for an obvious one in Ellis Sims as one of the signings of the summer. I rate him highly. I think he's a really classy all-round striker. Maybe looked a bit out of his depth in a poor Everton team in the Premier League. Probably wasn't ready for that. But at Sunderland, whenever I saw him, I thought he was really impressive, actually. So, yeah, I think in a strong Championship team like Coventry, he can really thrive. But I wanted to couple it with a wing-back, right wing-back that they've signed. Obviously had a few good right wing-backs in recent years, Coventry. They've gone for a guy from Heerenveen called Milan van Erwijk, who is going to be a terrace hero, I think. In Holland, it was all about, oh, Milan van Erwijk. It's just made for that song, isn't it? And apparently he's a real character. The quickest player in Dutch football last season, recorded the top speed, scores a few goals. So he could be quite an exciting player to watch down that right-hand side. As we know, Coventry love to fly down the flanks with their wing-back. So yeah, look out for van Erwijk.
All right, so that's Milan from the Netherlands sent to Coventry. Some big games coming up this weekend. Briefly, Sam, what is it about Sunderland Ipswich Sunday at 5 o'clock that makes it stand out for you?
Briefly, just the red and white against the blue and white. Just the classic hits. Two great clubs, I think, you know, and back in the big time, essentially. It's been a long time coming, I think, for Ipswich. Think about them dropping out of the Championship a few years ago, desperate atmosphere at Portman Road. I remember being there towards the tail end of that season, and it's taken them a while, and just amazing to see them with such a concise plan. I think a brilliant coach. So I'm just really enthused about their chances. I was going to go for Amari Hutchinson as one of my players to watch this season. Obviously another lad on loan from Chelsea, made the move from Arsenal, what, a year or so ago, struggled initially, but he could be really exciting. I know, having actually spoken to him just before the deadline in January, that he was on the cusp of moving to the Championship. It just fell away. I think it was West Brom, wasn't it?
West Brom, it was, yeah.
He's more than ready. Excited about that one. I thought Jack Taylor was a great League One player for Peterborough, goal scoring midfielder. That's another interesting pickup. And like I touched on with Sunderland, just Tony Mowbray has surprised me. I think they played some of the best football towards the tail end of last season. These could be two of the best looking sides in the division. arguably. And I'm looking forward to seeing this young Portuguese man, Emer, who at the moment I think is one of Sunderland's only fit frontmen, with Ross Stewart still regaining fitness. So yeah, and Bradley Dack, that was nice, wasn't it? Coming in for Tony Mowbray, a good little bit on Twitter of him going in for a cup of tea in the office rather than going in to see his new teammates. So Tony Mowbray's got one of his mates back at least. So no, I think that's just, I think it's on the telly as well. So 5 o'clock, I think it is Sunday. I think it's got the makings of a really good opening day game.
What do you think about Ipswich, Sam? Because a lot of people, when they came up, said, oh, Ipswich, they got the ambition, they've got the money, they've got the coach in Kieran McKenna to go right through into the Premier League. I just think that feels a big step up when you look at the squads of Southampton, Leeds, Leicester. It feels a stretch too far. They're going to have to... still going to have to overperform, aren't they, to hunt for promotion?
Yeah, because there'd be... A lot of people would say, oh, you're still only as good as your players, and that would be the sentiment. So the coach goes a long way, doesn't it, to getting results and getting the culture and the style of play that we saw that was so evident at Ipswich last year. But yeah, there'll probably come a time when they'll need to make that step, improve the quality of the player if they're going to want to make the push for the Premier League. I don't see it happening now.
Coventry outbid them for Sims, didn't they? So they wanted Sims, but Coventry were willing to put more money on the table. Well, I thought that was interesting because a lot of people were saying the Ipswich were going to be, not money bags, but they were going to really sort of test everyone. But they backed away from that, which I thought was interesting.
I mean, the nucleus of the squad is good, but, you know, you look at the two players I just mentioned, for example, they're not two players that are going to catapult you, I don't think, into a side that's going to push for the Premier League this year. I think the Ipswich fans would be absolutely thrilled with a, you know, 12th, 13th place finish this year. And that would be progress. And I'm sure in time it will happen. But I think, yeah, you probably have to gradually improve the calibre of the player, pay more money, you know, set your sights higher somewhat, not to be disrespectful to what they got now, but I think it's probably a little early.
All right. So Sam's looking forward to Sunderland v Ipswich because it's all happy new season vibes for those two. Adrian, are you rubbernecking, therefore, given that you've picked Watford v QPR? And are you as amazed as I am that this is the first time that Tom Ince will have played for Watford? I mean, that feels like the most Watford signing ever.
It's true. It's true. Yeah, he was always going to rock up there at some point, wasn't he? I can't believe he's not been there before. Jake Livermore as well. Like, just feels like he's already been there. I mean, he's signed a lot of experience. Jamal Lewis has come in, good left back from Newcastle. Yeah, I'm just fascinated to see how Watford are going to look under Valerian Ismael. What's he done in pre-season? Has he got them into that beast mode already? Are they going to buy into it? You know, is it going to be all about those long throws and corners and towels? Are towels banned now? I think towels might be banned now, which is a massive blow to his managerial credentials, I think, Ismael. But yeah, we know that they've got, you know, short attention spans, the owners there. They're going to have to hit the ground running, Watford. If they lose to arguably the worst QPR side in recent history on the opening day, he'll be under pressure, Ismael, at Watford. Watford, you know, he's already under pressure. So let's see what happens. I think, yeah, it's definitely a bit of rubbernecking on my part there.
Barkie, didn't we say when Valerian Ismael got a job at West Brom that Jake Livermore, there's no way he'd be able to play in Valerian Ismael press inside and he's taken him to Watford?
he's happy with 15 touches a game. It's fine. Yeah,
I'm sure we would have said Tom Ince hasn't got the hasn't got the depressing nature maybe as well. So who knows whether it's going to be exactly what's gone before with Ismael. I do like the signing of Healy though, Reece Healy. Yeah. I think when we probably first started doing our podcast, he pitched up at MK Dons and got a few goals, and all of a sudden he was off to Toulouse, where I think he was top scorer in the French second division, certainly a couple of years ago. So he could be an interesting signing to keep an eye on. But a little bit confused by their recruitment so far.
Yeah, it feels like there's been some purse tightening of the purse strings. That's the phrase I'm looking for, given they got so much money for Joao Pedro and they haven't really reinvested that. All right, that's the Championship. We're going to do just what we did with that, but with League One next. Right, this season, the third tier will feature Wigan, Reading and Blackpool, who dropped from the Championship, and Leighton Orient, Stevenage and Northampton, who are coming up from League Two. Adrian, who are you tipping to be amongst the promotion contenders in Tier 3?
First club that comes to my lips is Derby County.
Oh dear.
Because of Paul Warren. Yeah, I know it's not what you want to hear, but I just think he's had a year now there. He's got to know everyone. And we know he's a bit of an expert in the division. Quite like the recruitment, brought in some pretty good players over the course of this summer. But there'll be more to come. I look at them and I think, well, they've got a better balance now between youth and experience. And all they need is a bit of pace, you know, maybe a fair chunk of pace, actually. And then they'll have the penetration, I think, to go and hurt teams more, because they're well coached. They're hard to beat. Yeah, they'll be competitive in every game. I just think that they're pretty well suited. They're gonna have a beefier squad by the time we get to the end of the window that will allow them to compete over the course of a season. And obviously, they don't have that headache of having to sell every good young player that emerges now. You know, they can actually use them, and I think they got a great shot, because the League One has been brilliant the last few years, and it could be brilliant again. But I don't think the standard of League One will be as high this year as it was last.
Yeah, and I feel like, Sam, I don't know if you agree with me, that three teams coming down are not guaranteed to even be in the mix for playoffs, never mind for automatic promotion. So it should be a nice open field this year.
Yeah, I think it's the most open division by a country mile. As open as it's been since we've been doing the podcast, I would say. I can't hand on heart give you a clear favourite. Having spoken to Paul Warren and spent a bit of time with him towards the tail end of last season, I think we always felt that last year was going to be too soon because it wasn't his team. It had been built. It was building towards a really heavy possession, Liam Rossini side, building on the work that Wayne Rooney had done. So last year was going to be a bonus. I thought they were quite far off when I, maybe not in terms of their position, their finishing position, but when I saw them, I didn't think they were ready. That defeat at Peterborough towards the tail end, which left them needing kind of an almost immaculate finish to the season, they didn't look like a side that was ready for promotion. Yeah, I'm with Clarkey on the signings, albeit without really going and getting a striker that they can rely on. I think that's quite interesting, you know, having let McGoldrick go or losing McGoldrick and bringing in Connor Washington as your kind of forward who's going to guarantee you, what, between 8 and 12 goals, maybe. I'm a little bit unsure as to who's going to be the one to get the ball in the net, but Joe Ward, brilliant signing. Loved him at Posh. Kane Wilson obviously lost his way a little bit at Bristol City, injury, loss of form, whatever. Sonny Bradley, they're all good signings that'll catapult Derby certainly into one of the best sides in the division. And Paul Warren's been there and done it. So, yeah, they're definitely there in the mix. But then I could give you a whole host of sides. Definitely the two beaten playoff teams, Bolton and, sorry, Barnsley. They were the two I was going to say. I just love the spine at Bolton, albeit they've lost arguably two of the best players in League One last season in Trafford, who's gone to Burnley, and Connor Bradley, two of the most consistent performers. But the spine of that Bolton side with Santos, Morley, Charles is as good a potential goal scorer as you've got at the level. And they've continued to build each year. And Ian Everett, I really liked watching them last season. They didn't turn up in the playoffs. So if they can avoid that, they could be one to go up automatically. But there's a whole host of teams that will be fancying it. An outsider, just straight away, Oxford United, I think. Big shout, considering where they finished. But I think they've made some really good signings. I think there's a bit of financial clout there as well. I think there's real optimism around them. So you could go to a number of clubs, Portsmouth, Charlton, you know, Blackpool, teams that are all going to fancy it this year because it's so open.
You just rattled off the three that I was going to rattle off, probably with Peterborough in there, because Peterborough have always got to be in there, haven't they? I know they've had a bit of a turnover of players, but, you know, they've still signed some decent replacements. But yeah, I'd say of the relegated teams, Blackpool are the ones that stand out as having the best chance. Neil Critchley has definitely got a point to prove, but he's comfortable in that environment there, isn't he, at Bloomfield Road. So I think they've had a good pre-season by all accounts, Blackpool. They probably need a striker, but I see them as being the most stable of the relegated clubs, and they'll be in the mix for sure. Portsmouth finished the season superbly, didn't they, under John Mousinho, and they've signed a lot of players. Whether they're game changing players or not remain to be seen. I think they've added depth, but not necessarily players that are going to walk into the starting 11. Not loads of them anyway. But yeah, they've got to be considered this year. And Charlton are really interesting because they score so many goals. And if you can score a lot of goals, and they've just added Alfie May, you've got 20 for Cheltenham. So with May and Leeburn, and potentially another loan signing, you know, someone like a Rakitić, they won't get him again, but yeah, someone to add in. I think they're going to score enough to go up. It's just, can they keep it tight at the other end? And that is where they have to improve big time, Charlton. But if they can, they'll have a chance.
Yeah, they always make good loan signings, don't they, Charlton? They're
it's location, right, isn't exactly. It? Yeah. London, aren't they? It's you know, so many London clubs, they can just go, yep, we'll borrow them. And then these kids don't have to move.
Location, location, location. Important for them in terms of trying to get into the playoffs. Who's going to struggle, though, Clark? You're just looking at how the table finished up last year. So Sam thinks Oxford are going to be much better this time around. I think we probably both agree with that. But for the likes of Cambridge and Port Vale and Cheltenham, another season of struggle in store for them. And what about the promoted side?
Yeah, interesting. I've got Cambridge United on my list of strugglers. They've lost Sam Smith. He's gone to Reading. Harvey Nibbs has gone to Reading as well. So they're big holes to fill, aren't they, in the Cambridge lineup? I think they lost their centre half. Lloyd Jones has gone to Charlton as well, I think. So yeah, big change at Cambridge, and he's fighting against it. I think Cheltenham, I would have down as potential relegation. Exeter City have lost Archie Collins. They've lost a few players. It's going to be tough for them this year. And the other one I've got down here, That had a fine season last year at Lincoln. They were so solid, barely letting any goals, but they didn't score that many either. And they've been relatively quiet in the market this summer. And I always fear for a team that struggled to score goals for obvious reasons, because it puts so much pressure on everybody else to keep the ball out of the back of your net. And if they can't do that this year, then those draws will turn into defeats. So yeah, I'm a little bit nervous for Lincoln City this year.
Yeah, when you finish with a goal difference of zero, that's always a bit of a telling sign, isn't it? Scored 47, conceded 47. Remember, Lincoln drew 20 of their 46 league games last season. Any advance on those teams, Sam, for you, in terms of strugglers?
Yeah, I mean, I echo what Clarkey said on, yeah, Cambridge, Cheltenham, Exeter would be in my group to struggle. I can't think of a team that's lost so much quality maybe at the level as Exeter. You think of that trio up top of Stansfield, Brown and Nombe for period. Looks like Nombe may move on. So that will be tough to get over. Not completely convinced by the manager yet either, since he's come in. And yeah, Archie Collins, some that's gone under the radar, I think, for a number of years. But young lad, I think, 23, 24 now. Played 200 games, I think, and skip at Exeter for a number of seasons. So he's a colossal loss as well. Fleetwood, I suppose, because of the problems off the pitch, don't need to go into that today probably, but I think they've probably got a good enough manager, coach and good enough players to probably be all right, unless something goes horrendously wrong in terms of the finances at the club and they lose their way in that regard and lose players subsequently. So wait and see on that one. Reading, obviously, for similar reasons in terms of upheaval away from the pitch. They don't look like they've got their squad in situ yet. I like the two signings from Cambridge, actually. I think a lot of teams looked at Nibbs. Well, I know a lot of teams were looking at Nibbs because I think he was a free transfer from Cambridge. They've taken the plunge. Always like that. You know, lads that have been playing in a lower tier but really consistent, him and Sam Smith over a number of seasons. So I like those two signings, but Reading are really light, and with all the problems that they're starting the season with, they have to be in the conversation. So I'll probably add those two and maybe Port Vale as well. Port Vale not convinced at the moment that Andy Crosby was the right replacement for Daryl Clark. Interesting signings. I think a lot of loans, a lot of players out of Premier League academies and such like, but no Taylor, who was there back end of last season. No Wilson. So the burden will be Ellis Harrison for the goals. I'm not convinced they'll be able to be as comfortable as they were last year.
In terms of transfers, Adrian, we mentioned Archie Collins. He's the player that you've picked, or the move that you've picked. Devon, born and bred, Exeter all his career. Now he's made the move to Posh. Presumably, you think, a good move for him and for Peterborough as well?
Definitely. Yeah, well, they lost Jack Taylor, who was a really good all-round central midfielder, and they've brought in a really good all-round central midfielder in Archie Collins, who, as Sam rightly points out, is coming into his prime. You know, he's in his early 20s, he's got his best years ahead of him, and look, he's going to work under Darren Ferguson. We know that Posh heavyweights really at League One level. They're always there or thereabouts. I think he's going to be a big player for them. And yeah, I can see him taking his game to the next level. And look, if he does well at Peterborough, he'll end up in the Championship, won't he? And they'll move him on at some point. But yeah, he's someone I've always rated. I think he's got a bit about him. He can do a little bit of everything.
As for you, Sam, you think Alfie may continue his goal-scoring exploits at the Valley?
Yeah, Clark, you mentioned him a moment ago. Yeah, I like this. Coming home, essentially. He's from the area. Spent a number of years kind of pitching up at different non-league teams around that part of the world. So I think he's from Gravesend, so not too far away at all. And he didn't actually get that move to Doncaster till he was 23, 24. So it's come a little bit late for him, but be nice for him essentially being back home, having people come into the games and all that. And if he starts well, then I think he could be a real difference maker for Charlton. You think of Bristol City very early on under Dean Holden. It was that 3-5-2 formation that we spoke about loads at the time because he kind of just went for it and they hit the ground running. And I think Lee Byrne and May could be a stellar partnership for them. I think I really like Wickham's recruitment actually, but along with that, I think Charlton's signings really stand out. Lloyd Jones, who Clarkie mentioned, Camera, the midfield player from Ipswich, who
Instead the goalie.
Yeah, I understand a lot of teams were looking at Kamara, so that's a real get as well. But Alfie May could be the pick of the bunch, and I would expect him to get 20 for the reason that Clarkie stated. Charlton are great fun to watch, and you'd expect them to probably let a few in, but continue in the same vein going the other way.
In terms of opening weekend games to look out for, Clarkie, you've picked a high-class affair because it's Royals versus Posh.
Yeah, I didn't even notice that. But yeah, I'm a classy kind of guy, yeah. look, it's a bit more rubbernecking, really, because we know that Peterborough are going to be strong and they're away to Reading. And Ruben Selles, obviously we saw him in the Premier League last year with Southampton. I think he's made a mistake in going to Reading. I think it's a very unstable club with an ownership that's not in a great spot at the moment. And yeah, he's got his work cut out. According to him, this week, because I read about it, he's got 11 senior pros on the books and they're under a transfer embargo right now because they need to pay a tax bill. So Reading are short. And yeah, this could be a battering first day on home turf against Peterborough. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, it's an interesting one to keep your eye on. If Reading win under those circumstances, then you're starting to think, okay, this group of players has something about them, but I think it's going to be tough.
Pompey Bristol Rovers for you, Sam. We mentioned Pompey finished the season well. They didn't lose from the 14th of March onwards, but they did draw an awful lot of their games as well, didn't they? So they'll be looking to start off with 3 points in front of their own fans down there at Fram Park.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw them at Wimbledon in a pre-season friendly about a week or so ago, and they lost on the night, actually. But I looked to my left about 20 yards and they had Marlon Pack and Colby Bishop, Joe Morrell, all not involved that night. I think I've just listed their three best players. So if you think about that spine with the work they've done in the summer, again, Clarkie mentioned it, good calibre of players. Not loads of names that jump off the page, but I think it's a good squad now. I think Anthony Scully, we've watched him at Lincoln be really good, actually, at times. I think he's been the standout player over the preseason. You've got Gavin White on the other side, real pace players that are going to, you would think, provide Colby Bishop with loads of opportunities. So they're definitely in my thoughts, my promotion thoughts. And I think Bristol Rovers, I think they're, I don't know if they're in dark horse category, but I think they'll improve from last year. I think that the prospect of having Aaron Collins and Giovanni Brown in the same side, it's pretty mouthwatering for the Rovers fans. James Wilson as well from Plymouth, George Friend from Birmingham, Luke Thomas as well from Barnsley. I think I've just reeled off four of the most impressive signings in the division. So I think Bristol Rovers will have a much better season than last year. Maybe not enough to get into the mix, but yeah, that's a test for Portsmouth opening day. And for all the reasons I've stated today, a real open division. If the Portsmouth supporters can get on a bit of a roll as well, 1,100 I think they had at Wimbledon the other day, which is just phenomenal support. Yeah, I fancy John Messina's team to go close.
All right, we shall see. Right, as Ryan said to Rob, let's head to League Two, shall we? Yes, welcome to Wrexham in League Two. The Hollywood Welsh hybrid returning to the Football League, the big story in the fourth tier. But let's not forget Notts County, also back in the EFL, having matched Wrexham's achievement in breaking the 100-point barrier in the National League. As well as those two, we've got MK Dons, Morecambe, Accrington and Forest Green coming down from League One. Will either of those teams or any of those teams feature in our chaps' promotion predictions? Let's find out. Adrian, just looking at the odds, it's not often that you get two promoted sides as two of the top three favourites to go straight back up again. But Wrexham, we know they've got the cash. They're not going to have Paul Mullin for the first few weeks of the season. And Notts County, Luke Williams, very highly rated, isn't he? Different style of football to what you'd usually see in League Two. But are you expecting them to be there or thereabouts? And obviously Wrexham just buy who they want, essentially, don't they?
They've not really bought anyone apart from Will Boyle so far. From Huddersfield, wasn't it?
But they had a kind of League One standard squad anyway, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. I expect Wrexham to have a pretty lavish spend in August, because it's a huge surprise that they haven't gone early for some of the most sought after players. But they're obviously confident that they can come in late and negotiate some possible bargains, I guess, towards the back end of the window. But you've got to respect Wrexham and Notts County because of the points tally last year. Confidence is just overflowing. They've got goals for fun, haven't they, both teams? Macaulay Langstaff, just a goal machine, joined by McGoldrick from Derby County, who Derby wanted to keep, but he's moved for sort of family reasons. He fancies being, you know, closer to Nottingham. So yeah,
he lives in Mansfield, which is pretty much equidistant between Nottingham and Derby. So I'm
why is it then that he chose Notts County? Just found like the challenge, I guess. Then because I sort of read that it was because of family reasons.
I think he was a Notts fan growing up. But also, if you get the opportunity to complete the East Midlands triumvirate of Forest, Derby, and Notts, you've got to take it.
Yeah. So no, Wrexham, Notts County. They'll be involved in everyone's sort of top tips, I guess, for the league. Stockport, I think, have got to be considered up there. Interesting, Nick Powell has dropped down a couple of divisions to go there. He could be a class act at that level. Louis Barry, big loan move for him from Aston Villa. I like MK Dons. I think they'll be strong. And yeah, those are the main teams. But the ones who have been really active in the window are Doncaster, who have obviously got Grant McCann, who is a good manager. Did pretty well by and large at Peterborough, did okay at Doncaster before. They've signed some pretty good players, I've got to say. Joe Ironside's come in from Cambridge. You've got Jamie Sterry from Hartlepool. He's a good fullback. Richard Wood, an absolute winner. You know, he's knocking on a bit, isn't he, Woody? But he looks a good pickup. And they're just, you know, two or three of about 10 signings for Donny. So I think they'll be much better too.
Sam, I'm sort of bored of tipping Mansfield. Got them with them a little bit because they keep letting me down. Other teams, maybe Bradford, decent season last time round, and your mob Swindon under Mike Flynn.
Oh, big ask at the moment. I think bit light on the ground. Not many. I was going to say senior professionals. Not many professionals, I think, at the moment going into the season. Although the couple of bits of business they have done, I'm going to come on to one in a minute. But Liam Kinsella's just come in from Walsall. Good experience for a young player. And I think the kind of 3-5-2, Michael Flynn 3-5-2, is starting to take shape in the latter pre-season games. So I think there's relative optimism because it feels like the right man's in place now. Likeable character, good experience, knows the division. So in that regard, I think people are positive, but maybe a long shot for Swindon. I had Mansfield in my notes. I think we've spoken of probably the four that are going to battle it out. If I was to go now in Stockport, Salford and the two promoted sides, but Mansfield would be... Yeah, definitely in my thoughts. I thought that towards the back end of last season, maybe just lost their way a little bit. Reece Oates, obviously, probably their biggest threat. I think he missed a bit of football. They've got Will Swan permanently now. I think they've got a good squad to go again. You don't always know what you're going to get, but I'd fancy Wrexham to be top half again, pushing for the playoffs. And given what they did back in the last season and what they've continued to do in the summer, Gillingham, I think... You know, they were, what, from January, one of the best sides in the division. Certainly, we knew as soon as the new owners took charge, the players like Hawkins and Nichols came into the club, we knew they were going to be nowhere near the relegation zone. And I think the signings of the likes of Johnny Williams, Nanason, over the summer months will strengthen them further. Connor Masterson as well. So, yeah, I would suggest Gillingham are going to be top half, probably pushing towards the playoffs at least.
Relegation-wise, Adrian, have you picked and why is it Crawley?
It's Crawley because the ownership is a disaster zone. Nothing really needs to be added. I mean, yeah, listeners, know our thoughts on Crawley's ownership. Again, they're recruiting from non-league and that can work. You know it can, but very few players with a great deal of experience in the EFL have been brought in this summer. I think it's going to be tough for them. The other one is Newport County. I think I just get a feeling that they're in a slight decline. It's been a steady decline, I guess, since Mike Flynn left, but they've sort of hung around there and season on season, they seem to be dropping off and losing their identity a little bit and not sold on their recruitment this summer particularly either. So, yeah, it's in the absence of sort of an obvious crisis club, I would probably go with Newport, who weren't that far off of the relegation zone last season, just to maybe be more in amongst it this time.
Sam, anybody else you think might struggle? I'm looking at maybe the likes of Harrogate and Morecambe, who are quite high up in terms of the odds.
Yeah, I'd have those two definitely as potential strugglers. Morecambe, I think, for off-field reasons and no Calder goal Stockton. Seems to have, well, he's moved now, hasn't he? So that seems to be the...
Gone to Burton, hasn't he? Yeah,
gone to Burton, which... yeah, on the face of it, it's a good move for him. But a year ago, I would have fancied him going to a team that were pushing for promotion in League One. I think I probably championed that. Someone like, I don't know now, maybe even an Ipswich taking him and just giving him a year or two to try and give him the firepower. But he's ended up at Burton. Crewe, although a few of the signings on Clarkie's spreadsheet that he sent me yesterday have actually jumped out to me a little bit. Jack Powell, Cooney from Morecambe, Dimitri from Newport, Tracy from Cambridge. Don't know, for a team that you consider to be made up of youth products and be a bit of a soft touch, quite like what they've done there. So maybe that'll be enough for Lee Bell and Crewe. But yeah, definitely Crawley, Morecambe, Newport, Harrogate are the four that I've got placed below Crewe at the moment.
Transfer-wise, Adrian, we've spoken about David McGoldrick already. It certainly was an eyebrow raiser that he has dropped from League One to League Two to go to Notts. I mean, him and Langstaff might be fighting over the ball, I guess. But other than that, he ought to score a hatful in this division.
Yeah, he's my top signing. I mean, he got 22 in League One. I know he's in his mid-30s now, but he's not just about goals, though, McGoldrick. I think operating potentially as part of a front two with Langstaff, I think he could tee up a load for the younger model, if you know what I mean. So we might see, it might be more like he gets 16 goals and 12 assists. You know, that's how I could see it for McGoldrick in the season ahead. But look, it's a massive coup for Notts County. And yes, providing he stays fit, I can't see him failing there.
Yeah, he's returning to the club where he started his career, joined Notts as a 9-year-old before he left for Southampton at 16. All right, so that's David McGoldrick. Sam, who have you picked out as the big acquisition in League Two?
Yeah, I teased it a few minutes ago. Dan Kemp going to Mile Club Swindon. Just took me a little bit. There's not been much business in League Two other than the Nick Powell move to Stockport and obviously McGoldrick, which has made me go, oh, so that's not bad business. But I did that with Dan Kemp. Strange, because he's at MK Dons and... he went to Hartlepool the back end of last season and he scored 11 goal involvements in 16 games for one of the worst teams in the division. He got a hat trick and a couple of braces. He was whipping in left footed free kicks like they were going out of fashion. Quality player. Gives you like straight away additional threat from set pieces, from obviously goal scoring opportunities, but also from wide and from corners. Little diminutive player. Really liked him. Liked him at Chelsea when he was way back when he was coming through there. I think he was with kind of Mason Mount, Declan Rice, that kind of era. Always kept an eye on him when he went to West Ham and then turned up at Leyton Orient a couple of years ago, and I thought did pretty well for them. So I think he could be a difference maker, and strange as to why he's not getting the opportunity at MK Dons, but definitely Swindon's gain, and yeah, eye-catching.
In terms of games that are catching eyes this weekend, Adrian, at last, you've picked a positive one rather than just trying to riff on people's pain. Stockport v Gillingham, we've just put them as two of our promotion contenders.
And that's the reason why. Yeah, it's purely because I think these two will be in and around the top six, the top eight throughout this season. One other player Stockport brought in outside of Powell and Louis Barry is Ibu Touré, of course. I thought he was going to stay at Salford forever, but he's made the short trip across Greater Manchester, is it, to Stockport. So yeah, I think these two sides are going to be decent this year, and it should be a close fought match, that one on opening day.
Sam, I would say that you've picked the battle of the teams with maybe the highest profile owners in League Two. That's how I'm pitching this one. Forest Green Rovers versus Salford.
Yeah, I can say it now, can't I? What on earth happened at Forest Green Rovers last season? I mean, that feels a bit like a dream, does it not? The Forest Green fans must be thinking, did that really happen?
Duncan Ferguson discovering that chips were vegan was one of the oddest moments of the season.
I didn't get it at the time. It was like the most obscure appointment I think there's been in the EFL in the last few seasons. It just didn't fit at all. It felt like the owner was going after a name, or he was starry-eyed, but the proof was in the pudding, wasn't it? You know, they were miles off having a go at staying in the division. Just that one kind of anomaly when Clarkey was there and they beat Sheffield Wednesday under Duncan Ferguson, where they were brilliant. But yeah, it was an awful, awful appointment, wasn't it? And this, all of a sudden, feels much more like Forest Green. So really intrigued to see what David Horseman and Lewis Carey throw up. Lewis Carey, by the way, in the fashion stakes, we'll keep an eye on him. He's a bit out there in the technical area. David Horseman's number two. Like the signing of Matty Taylor as well. Matty Taylor was there in kind of Forest Green's rise, if you like, before he got his move to Bristol Rovers, I think it was. So he's going back to where it all kind of started for him, the big time. So I think that's a nice story as well. But I'd be expecting Forest Green Rovers to be back to what they were maybe under Mark Cooper and latterly Rob Edwards. And Salford, I don't think there needs to be too much change. I thought they were, unfortunate in the playoffs. I thought Stockport were the best side. And I think the majority of League Two managers and League Two players and League Two fans would have liked Stockport to get out of the way last season. So I think people would be a little bit frustrated that Stockport are still at the level this year. But yeah, Salford, I think they've got a really good guy at the helm, really good manager. I thought they played some good stuff. I thought there's a little bit of flexibility in the way they can set up, and I expect them to be amongst the favourites. So I think that's an intriguing game for a number of factors.
All right, looking forward to League Two this season, particularly the top end, lots of contenders there. We're just about done. Tweet of the week, don't worry, we'll return next week. But to finish this week, I'll ask the chaps a couple of random questions for things in the EFL, and we'll revisit these at the end of the season. First one, top scorer in all of the EFL. Who's going to get the most goals, Clarkey?
It's such a hard one. It's so hard. I've got loads of names here. One that's a bit out there, it's not going to be my pick, is Joel Pirro. Who's at Swansea, because he's being linked with Leeds and Leicester and Southampton. And I think if he makes the move to one of those clubs, he could go to 25 to 30 goals, potentially. I really rate him. But I'm going to go with Colby Bishop, because I think Portsmouth are going to have a really good season. He's coming into a good age, and I think he's going to play pretty much every week under Mousinho. And I think he can get 28 to 30 goals this season, Colby Bishop. So there you go.
Sam, I know that Jamie Vardy is joint leading the way in terms of top goal scorer in the Championship, which is pretty amazing if you watched him play in the Premier League last season. Who do you think is going to get the most goals in all three divisions?
I'm going to have to change my answer now, aren't I? Because Colby Bishop would be my man.
Really?
Oh. Yeah, he would be. Yeah, I think it was 20 goals last year and they finished eighth and going to play every week. I think he's the best in that division. You know, I've always been a fanboy for the old Accrington. Bobby Bishop and Deion Charles. Outside of him, I think Armstrong or Adams at Southampton, one of them could plunder a load of goals, because they made their way, didn't they, to the Premier League, notching goals in the EFL. So I'd fancy one of those two. Clark Harris and Alfie May would be my other two shouts. I'll go for Alfie May, just because I've talked about him no end today, to just pick Colby Bishop. There you go.
Nobody asked me, but I'll go for Macaulay Langstaff just because he's got so many goals.
Good shout. Oh, yeah, I was going to put Mullin in the mix, actually, but I probably would have Mullin there if it wasn't for the injury as well, right at the top end. But I'll go for Alfie May. But Mullin and Langstaff, good shouts.
Adrian, which league will have the most sackings?
Well, I looked at last year, and it was very quick research, but in Championship, League One, League Two order, the sackings were, I think, 17... 13, 15. So quite evenly matched. The easy answer would be to say the Championship. I'm going to go for League One because I think it's so wide open this year that everyone, all the owners, all the chairmen, are going to think they should be doing well. And when they're not, they're going to pull the trigger. So I'm going to go with League One.
Same for you, Sam?
Exactly the same answer. Exactly my thought process. Exactly
really?
What I'm bringing down. Yeah. But I'll add to that, given Clarkie's research as well, few of the clubs are due one then. There's only been 13 seconds in League One last year. There's going to be a few that are maybe close to the end already. So for that reason, and for what Clarkie stated, you know, the expectation of the likes of Portsmouth, Charlton, Bristol Rovers, Oxford, Peterborough, maybe to get in there and get promoted to the Championship this year. So maybe we'll see a few more bite the dust.
Right, my final question is a little cheeky one. How many times are Wrexham going to be shown live on telly this season? Be surprised if either of you go for single figures here. Adrian, what do you reckon?
No, I mean, League Two just don't get that many games. There's international breaks, isn't it, really, when League Two comes into its own? I don't know. They're always going to be on every international break, aren't they? I'll go for seven, which is still probably extraordinary for a League Two team.
All right, they've already got one in the bag, Sam, which is the Carabao Cup game against Wigan on the 8th of August. How many more are you going to add to that total?
I think they'll get maybe one more plum draw in a cup competition. Is it got to be, have you named the broadcaster or is it just
no,
Yeah. Oh, so they'll nick one on the Beeb or ITV as well, won't they, in the cup? That's three. Playoffs, I'm saying, as well. Five, six. Yeah, with playoffs, what did you say, Clarkie?
Seven.
I'll go for six.
Okay, I'm going to go for 10. Don't ask me why, but just to make it a little bit more.
So basically you're saying the broadcast companies are a bit shallow. They just want a bit of Rob and
yes.
Ryan, don't they?
100%. Yeah. Don't we all? All right, that's just about going to do it for this, our first pod of the new season. Before we go, Adrian, tell people how they can keep up with us on social media.
Well, yeah, we've had a little breather, so hopefully we'll bring it all back out. It'll be some best clips and hopefully a few added bits over the course of the season. It's just at What the EFL on Instagram, on TikTok, but on Twitter it's EFL What's the, just because that handle was already taken. So we've gone slightly back to front. But yeah, give us a follow. Please share. If you enjoyed the pod, please tell your mates and share things on social media. It really, really helps.
Yeah, and don't worry, we will be calling it Twitter throughout the season and not X, because I'm sure by this time next week it will be changed back to Twitter anyway. As Adrian says, if you can give us a follow, if you can tell a friend, if you could subscribe to the pod, leave us a nice review, all that stuff really helps us in terms of the prominence of the pod and to help other EFL enjoyers find us as well. We'll be back next week to review the best of the opening weekend's action. Until then, enjoy the football.